The views and opinions expressed by the guests, callers, and hosts on this and all Rents Radio Network programs do not necessarily reflect or agree with those of the network, its commercial sponsors, its radio station affiliates, or internet broadcast platforms. In these controversial times, we believe the First Amendment and freedom of the press are absolutely essential to the survival of our nation. Thank you. And now, enjoy the program.
Okay, and here we are. It's Tuesday, and we're moving right into February. Hope you're all okay and still with us tonight. Remember that music you just heard years ago when somebody sent it to me? Said it was, in the public domain. There's so many composers out there, amateur composers, that I never found out who did it, or I'd give them credit. But when I first used it, it was too doom-laden. And I said, just wait. We're headed into difficult years. And I don't know how many years ago that was, but the music now is absolutely apropos to the times in which we are struggling and may not be strong enough. Think about that. All right. Time to go down to Louisiana and talk to Dr. David Duke. Professor Duke joins us once a month to share his wit and wisdom. Hello, David.
Yes, sir. I'm glad to be with you, my friend. How are you?
Thanks. That's a loaded question. I'm fine. I'm fine.
Well,
you believe
tell you,
that? Never mind.
I'm just trying to cope with all this balloonacy.
Yes. There you go. That's it. It's a coping.
And by the way,
it's coping action
really,
every day.
I think that the balloonacy that's going on is indicative of the insanity we have in terms of missing the boat on who really is destroying this country and the real threat to America. I mean, it's just amazing. I mean, it's not
how
the Chinese
about,
that opened our
how
border.
How about Jewish and Christian Zionism are destroying
yes.
this country?
Right.
All
and,
orchestrated from the city of London at the top of the visible food chain.
Yeah.
Now, it doesn't end there. I firmly believe, and I know some of you are going to laugh, but that there is an ET race that has lived here perhaps for a long time. Maybe it just came relatively recently in the last 100 years, 200 years. Call them reptilians, call them what you want. I call them evil. And I suggest that evil presence is ultimately pulling the big strings on this planet
yeah.
right now. This planet has gone evil.
You know, it's really kind of amazing, too, when you think about it. I mean, Jews actually brought communism to China. And you can Google it. You can look up China, Mao,
yes, they
Jews.
Did. That's all
and,
true.
And this is all fact. In fact, they brag about it and so forth. But here's the situation. The Jews, there's just not enough Jews in China to run the show. As simple as that. And they had an influence of bringing communism. But communism was always a con anyway. It was really not about the proletarian. It was really about this Jewish minority. Leon Trotsky, in fact, in Martin Gilbert's great book called Churchill and the Jews that showed how that the Rothschilds, believe it or not, yes, even the Rothschilds and these Jews made Churchill an asset for Zionism. And it's really interesting. It's a fantastic book. Now, this was the formal biographer of Winston Churchill. And he was, in fact, he was knighted for his five-part biography. Martin Gilbert was a big Zionist that did books on the history of Zionism. And in that book, he talks about Churchill, and Churchill's in the Illustrated Sunday Herald article, where he quotes Trotsky, how, and this is what Gilbert says, and he doesn't, he doesn't in any way refute this, because there's nothing to refute. He says, Leon Trotsky saw communism, and these Jews saw communism as a way for Jews to dominate and control the world. This Jewish, you might say this Jewish mafia, even though it's not a mafia, but Judaism is itself a belief that they are the chosen of God and they are the tissue of God. And it's extremely racial. It's extremely ethnic. It's about genealogy. And it has very terrible, prescriptive and very angry and nasty comments about Gentiles all through the Talmud. And it's just something you can't really talk, you're not supposed to talk about today. It is a religion, but it's different than any other religion, and it's based on a genealogy and the belief that it is, that genealogy is supreme. But the interesting thing is, it gets me now, is that this, with this balloonacy, it seems like no thinkers or nobody can really think, and the stuff we get in media is so ridiculous today, it's just amazing to me, because if you look at this balloon, and just look at the photographs, you can look at it closely, and Tucker was calling it like a military aircraft, whatever. And they were talking about how the fact that it flew over near the military base in Billings, Montana, and military Air Force base, and some of the ICBM things in North America near the Canadian border and so forth. But there's just no rationality to the whole thing. It's like, think about it for a second. This is a balloon. This is a balloon that they say was launched from China, a balloon. It wasn't a dirigible with big engines on it or propellers on it that could guide this balloon. A balloon, and they were talking about how this balloon was the size of three buses, right?
200 feet tall.
Yeah, but that was the balloon. That was the light, helium field section of it, and they had
and
a very
according
small
to,
section.
And David, according to NORTHCOM, the general in charge, it had several thousand pounds of electronic gear attached to it.
I don't believe him
it.
Because I saw the pictures of it, and I saw the oscillator.
I looked at it too. I didn't see it.
There was a solar array
there. There were a couple other little doodads.
Light solar panels, which they often use for even helicopter craft.
Well,
he completely
stood up there and lied, bald-faced lied, if that's not
true. Yeah, because
they
were trying to make this thing more than it was. And that's why they called it, the size of three buses. Well, listen to this. When you have a balloon, it's got to be lighter than air, right? And as you know, the air currents are amazing. I don't know if you've ever flown by a jet over to Asia, and I've done that before. And also, another good friend of mine, Dr. Slattery, did that. And when they were flying over, because of the winds and so forth, and the variable winds, they had to fly and get refueled. In one time in Alaska, another time in northern Japan, because their fuel was so low because they were dealing with the winds. And when you get in the upper atmosphere, there's a lot of wind up there. And the idea that you can direct a balloon just simply goes where the wind blows it. Simple as that. Now, there are certain currents that kind of run, generally speaking. But if you were trying to aim at a military base, right, and fly over a specific military base to spy on this, this happened to be this North Dakota or whatever, or Montana military base, the possibility of you hitting the target of what you tried to plot would be impossible, because that big light area, the balloon itself, catches so much wind, it would take enormous amounts of power and direction to you
well,
to
let
change.
Let me ask you this. I get what you're saying. Let me ask you this. What are your thoughts on the coincidental potential of the jet stream blowing it precisely over Class A targets like that, the Strategic Air Command base in Montana, missile installations, the Midway, big military installation was Kansas. Go ahead.
Well, first off, you got to understand that this is the heart of our NORAD defense system. And there are literally, and I've looked into this because actually back in my Klan days, which I guess it can never live down, even though it was a nonviolent organization and all the things in black KKK Klansmen were all lies. There was never any bomb. There was never any arrest. There was never any violence of any of the Klan members. But our Klan members then in Colorado Springs were NORAD people, right? They had security clearance because, you know, they were completely, they had never no criminal record or whatever, just normal enlisted men. Some of them were actually officers as well. All they did was that they maintained these missile bases. And they told me that there were literally hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of these silos, you know, with the ICBMs in it. And so the chance of, you know, there's so many military bases, in fact, in this country. In fact, we have like 800 in the world outside the United States. We are a very militarized country. We have more military. We spend more military than the entire rest of the world, every country combined. And I really do believe that. It's because at the emergence after the Second World War, these Jewish supremacists, this Jewish supremacy, they controlled America. In fact, by the way, I've been doing a lot of research in the Vietnam War. And if you look in the Vietnam War, the Vietnam War was orchestrated by Rostow, Walt Rostow, a Jewish neocon, just like Henry Kissinger. Henry Kissinger actually wrote a book called, what was the name of it? It was called Nuclear Weapons and Diplomacy. And in that book, this was written in the 60s. You can't hardly believe this. And this is when he was rising up, right? And in that book, he actually said that he was advocating that America, which I do believe even at this time, they saw a threat, not from the Soviet Union, but they saw a set, because what was going on in the Soviet Union at the time under the last days of Stalin, and then more importantly in the 50s, that they saw Jews losing some of their power in what was the Soviet Union. We had Khrushchev, for instance, go before the Duma and say, Christianity is going to be legal from now on. We want to support the church, you know, the Orthodox Church. They said, they even talked about the murders of the Soviets, and they condemned the murders of the Soviets. And what happened was that I do believe that they were really, the Russian people actually overthrew the Jewish power structure, the original Jewish Soviets, which actually changed the name of Russia to the Soviet Union. That's how much they hated Russia. And they still hate Russia. I mean, look at Jacob Schiff. You know, look at Nadler, you know, everything in the media. Look at what's going on in the Ukraine war. They still hate Russia. But so they were really worried about this is what, you know, you remember the reason why I believe we had the Marshall Fund wasn't because they really wanted to help Germany all that. In fact, the first thing they were doing under Blumenthal and Morgenthau was they were putting the Germans on like a diet that was less than alleged Auschwitz, right, and the concentration camps, believe it or not. And they wanted to control Germany because they were really afraid about the return of National Socialism. Because, in fact, they really believed that. I remember going into the libraries at LSU when I was going to university there and reading all these Jewish papers, these articles from these journals and everything in the 1940s and 50s, you know, warning the world about the return of Nazism. Because they saw that, you know, a lot of people around the world saw that German National Socialism worked pretty well for Germany. The war destroyed everything, of course, but their economy was good. They had good, clean water, good, clean air. They had a good health service. You know, the people that have very low crime, that have very well-run society. And they were afraid that this was going to come back. So they wanted to spend a lot of money in trying to control Germany, because they were afraid also National Socialism was going to come back as well in Germany. Very much afraid of that. And they're afraid it's going to pop up all over the world. In fact, they're afraid that some of the gold was stashed some places that they were going to use to finance this kind of thing. It was really nothing but paranoia because, you know, they like to cover their butts, you know. But if you look at the Marshall plan, It was about, yeah, it was about bringing Germany, repairing the economy, and loaning money to Germany, which was loaned, by the way, which Germany ended up paying back. I should point that out really clearly. Unlike a lot of the loans to some of these other countries they didn't make in the Second World War, like to the Soviet Union, a good example. But so what they did was, if you find this interesting, I hope anyway, whatever, but it's an interesting story. So they began to realize, because even by the late 40s, early 50s, they began to see that Jews were losing some power, because they knew this. They monitored the country and the Politburo and the Presidium and the Duma, and they even in the KGB. They had Jewish spies around the world, but they knew that the Russians were gaining a lot of power. In fact, Stalin himself, who saw the Jews as a dangerous challenge to him because of their loyalty for each other, the Zionists, and he saw Zionism as a loyalty, which was then competing with Bolshevism, and the Jews actually pivoted over to Zionism, as you know, and they pivoted over to Trotskyism. We had some Jews pivot over to Zionism, which were like the neocons, and that's a perfect example. Leo Strauss, people like, so many. We're talking about Richard Perle, Paul Wolfowitz, the Crystals, who ran who took over the Republican Party. Now, the reason they pivoted, in my opinion, to the Republicans, because it was perfect for them. Because the Republicans were always anti-communist, just like I am, just like my daddy was, who served in the military in the Second World War, and most good Americans. And it was easy for them to pivot for a conservative to be against Russia because of the communist background before. But they saw Russia, they knew by the 1960s and 70s, they knew that Jewish power and these Jewish, you know, Jewish powers in Russia were waning, that they were losing out to the Russians. In fact, in the 1950s, again, Khrushchev and the Russian leadership, they legalized the church. They began to build churches. And then finally, you had the revolution. The Russians overthrew the communist government. And then also they actually disbanded the Warsaw Pact. And they actually said, we're against communism. And they were against communism. And they weren't communists. And at that point, guess what happened? Well, they had to keep NATO going because they wanted NATO because they were really worried about the National Socialists coming back in Germany. This is my opinion. This is maybe something new for you, maybe not. I don't know. They were worried about it. So they wanted to control Germany. And they also wanted a counterweight. So instead of saying, we don't need NATO anymore. And the Russians, by the way, removed all their weapons, all their tanks, all their guns, all their troops from all of Eastern Europe, the Baltic states, from Romania, all these countries were removed.
Right. Sure.
Right? Yeah. And they said, let's have peace. We don't need peace. In fact, Russia even offered to join NATO with the idea that we'd be in NATO as friends rather than enemies. And we wouldn't have to spend all this money on defense, and we could spend more money on education, more money on giving taxpayers some relief. God knows we need that, and all these other things. But without NATO, you know, the Jewish power that existed in America, which was rising, again, Rostow rose literally during the time of Kennedy. And the Jewish deep state, like the CIA influence, came way back to them. I think the CIA and Israel had a part to play in the assassination of John F. Kennedy. I'd like to ask, before I go any further in this dialogue, I'd like to ask you if you think that's very likely or possible that Israel had a role in the Kennedy assassination. What do you think about that?
98%, yes.
I thought so. Just about every major issue, you and I are like twin brothers of different mothers. Anyway, So they were concerned about this. Now, I'll give you an example about this. Let's just take the WEF, the World Economic Forum. All right. Now, a lot of people believe that the World Economic Forum is like a secret government of the United States. Actually, what it is, it's an organization that's meant to propagandize leaders of different countries all over the world on behalf of the Zionist agenda, the Jewish globalist supremacy agenda. That's what I believe it is. And so what they did was they looked for any upcoming politicians, and they especially concentrated some, by the way, in Germany. Now, the interesting issue about this is that let's take a look at Charles Schwab. And some people think he's Jewish just by the name and so forth. And he's kind of a strange guy. He's like a doctor, not a Dr. Strangelove, but he's kind of like a doctor, whatever. I don't know, like something from a James Bond movie, right? And Schwab actually is not Jewish. His father, in fact, was a National Socialist. His father was a manufacturer, which really helped in the German war effort and produced a lot of their weapons when they were out fighting the communists and fighting, you know, the destruction of Germany and the support of the Soviet Union, of course, by the Allies. I hope you agree with me that the Second World War was the greatest tragedy we ever had in Western civilization. It was not necessary. I think Patrick Buchanan was right. It was a war. It was an unnecessary war. The Germans weren't trying to conquer the world.
Well, let me say one other thing. It was a highly profitable endeavor for the evil that caused it, staged it, and pulled it off. I would suggest, though, that what's going on now, David, and it has yet to play out in full, is the greatest tragedy ever perpetrated on humanity. And I think you're going to see in the next year or two, so many people die that it'll be utterly normalized. They're already doing that. People, there have been about 6 billion people have been injected now. With
really?
Yes. 6 billion, about 6 billion have received over 13 billion injections. That's on an average of 2 plus per person. Now, that said, we have any limit. I can't even imagine a limit. Any reasonable limit on the means, the pathways by which this vaccine could kill people, I'd feel better. It seems to be almost limitless. There are so many different ways that this injection can destroy life. It's not funny. Every week we find out new things about it, new ways that it can kill and is killing. It's
one
astounding.
Of the biggest things, I think, if you'd like me to add an injection there, is the fact that one thing we do know it does is it hijacks the immune system. So when you have an immune system...
It destroys the immune system, David. It destroys it. You end up with AIDS.
Well, hijacks it and that destroys it, right?
Yeah.
But this is what... And it also controls the DNA to make the spike protein, and there's no stop switch on it, right?
Correct.
So it's going to make spike proteins because you're getting the nuclei of the genes to make the spike proteins, right? So anyway, if you look, this is my, as you know, I'm always reading this stuff and studying this stuff, and I love health and nutrition and all those kind of things, and I really read a lot of scientific papers on it. So this is what I believe about it. This is my opinion, and with a dollar you can go buy a cup of coffee, maybe $2 a day or $3 or $10 at Starbucks. But but the situation is that when you destroy the immune system, as you say, it opens the pathway to every kind of disease and every kind of bad situation, all kinds of diseases which will be compounded. Yeah. In other words, if you have a problem, for instance, say you have inflammation in your arteries. And inflammation is caused, by the way, not by fat in your arteries. It's not because you have saturated fat and it goes to your arteries. The inflammation is caused by destruction of the epithelium, the walls of the arteries.
The epithelial covering on the inside of every vein and every artery.
Right.
Yes.
So that's when that's attacked. What happens is when it's broken, the body has to repair that, and they repair that with cholesterol. By the way, the body makes huge amounts of cholesterol every day. They make 400 units of cholesterol every day. I mean, a lot more than they talk about with people with congestive heart failure. And by the way, congestive heart failure was not even known in America in 1912.
Let's cut to the punchline because I know where we're going with this. Go ahead.
Oh, okay.
Cholesterol.
So we go there. So what happens is that's when you get heart attacks is because the inflammation then, and the inflammation basically is, it happens when the immune system is screwed up, right? And because you're agitating the system. So the inflammation is from these foods that we're eating, and lots of different foods that we eat cause this inflammation. And when the immune system doesn't work right, you get inflammation. When the immune system works perfectly, you don't get much inflammation. So the immune system is damaged. You get more heart attacks from that way. But also you get all kinds of other things. It attacks the muscles of the heart. It attacks the muscles around the heart. And the heart is one organ. This is why myocarditis or pericarditis is so incredibly dangerous, because the heart muscle is one of your organs that can't regenerate. Your liver can regenerate. Your brain, to a degree, can actually get some regeneration. Many organs
not
in your
much.
Body can't.
It's well, the
not
brain
much,
and the
but
heart.
It can't some.
Not much.
It can't some.
Yeah, okay.
But the heart can't. The heart is basically, you're stuck with what you got. So when you get myocarditis, you're in bad shape. Then, of course, another thing that does, spike proteins, which we've seen this with whatever, and lots of different kind of fluids, it causes also these blood clotting. It causes blood clotting. Again, that is probably caused as well from different inflammatory kind of conditions. But blood clotting, which can go into the lungs and cause congestive heart failure and all sorts of other heart failures and lack of breath and the rest of it, you strangle to death, basically. It can also go into the brain, cause strokes. It can destroy the brain, obviously, and it can destroy all kinds of organs in your body. So there are lots of things this shot can do, this jab can do. It's not really a vaccine, as you know. It's not a vaccine at all by the original definition. Of the
never
term.
Was, never could be, wasn't
no.
designed to be.
It never
it's
stopped
a deployed
the spread
weapon, and it's working perfectly.
It never kept you from getting the disease, nor did it keep you from spreading the disease.
That.
In fact,
it's
the evidence
an
is overwhelming that it made what you it more susceptible right. to getting the disease and spreading the disease. That's a fact.
There's much more to it than all that, but you did a good job.
There is more to it, but I'm just trying to get
thumbnail sketch of it.
Yeah, thumbnail. Getting back
go ahead.
Okay, so I wanted to go to understand these evil people, like again, Rostow. Now, guess who's Charles? I've been doing research in Charles Schwab. I think you'll find it really interesting. I think your audience
will. How do you know about
really
Schwab? I would have guessed he was tripe. Interesting.
Yeah, he was not, right? He's not. He's actually a German. But guess where he came from? Guess where he was created into Charles Schwab and the WEF? It was created by, guess who? Henry Kissinger, actually. Now, Henry Kissinger was part of the tribe, big part of the tribe. He helped lead us into the Vietnam War. He helped betray us in the Vietnam War. And he was, he was supporter, big supporter of NATO. He was a very, very, very high level Jewish, supremacy kind of a guy, right? Now, at one time, Harvard was pretty European. And one of the first major Jewish people in the foreign policy in Harvard were Kissinger and his first Jewish boss in the Harvard diplomacy school and the Harvard economics and diplomatic schools. And guess what Kissinger did? Well, this is what Kissinger did. There was an organization founded and supported by none other than Nahum Goldman's son, and I'll tell you who Nahum Goldman was in a minute, which is an amazing Jewish personality, one of the most famous Jews in the world. In fact, the Jew who's considered the most famous for the creation of the State of Israel. His father was Nahum Goldman, that was the father of a man named Guido Goldman. And so he's a son of the most famous Jewish Zionist in the world, right? He was one of the mentors of Charles Schwab. Kissinger was a mentor of Charles Schwab. Another guy named Herman Kahn was a member of Charles Schwab. And you could read about these guys. And in fact, Herman Kahn was very, very, very anti-Russian, of course, and because, again, the Jewish intelligentsia, this is the time that Leo Strauss and these other Jews who were Trotskyite communists switched over to being Republican. And it was perfect for them because the Jewish communists were already going to be in the left anyway, and they're all Trotskyites now. And they're going to be anti-Russian because Russia Stalin killed their patron saint, the guy they loved, which was Leon Trotsky, Lev Bronstein,
right.
who was murdered
right.
in Mexico, right?
Right?
So at the same time, so what they realized, they're going to have the Republicans, are going to have this traditional anti-Zionist, well, they should have been, but they're anti-communist for good reason because of what the communists did. But the Russians at that point overthrew communism. It's a great story. It's a story that should encourage all of us because it tells people that it's not hopeless. when you really think about the fact that they actually overthrew them from within, they actually did that. And there's so much evidence. Solzhenitsyn ran this whole thing through to me. And you know, Solzhenitsyn put out the books. And he explained the whole thing to me. And I talked to many people. And I think I told you the story one time on the show that when I was in Laos teaching English to Laotian army officers, fighting the communists, by the way, in Laos. And when I was there, I'm driving to school. We had a house there. My father did. He did things like building bridges and roads and hospitals and so forth for the Royal Laotian government, which was the anti-communist government, fighting the Pathet Lao. And when I was there teaching, I'm coming to school one day, and this woman on a bicycle came right out in front of me. I ran into the back of a Russian embassy car. And, of course, I've always been very anti-communist in my life. Now, back in the 1960s, and do you remember a publication by Con McGinley called Common Sense? Do you remember that publication years ago?
Vaguely, maybe.
Well, Common Sense was...
Sound like a Thomas Paine publication.
It was like that, but it was really a strong, hardcore, pro-European, pro-heritage, against, Zionism and against communism, And this publication, I was really shocked by it. And this publication, I talk about it in my book, which a lot of your listeners have read by now, My Awakening, and also in Jewish Supremacism, best-selling book in the world, or the most read book in the world, I should say. Not selling, it's kind of given out free, basically, or you can buy it from us, even though you can't buy it on Amazon anymore, of course
Very
not.
Good. Yeah.
But in this book, I go to great lengths to explain how I first got educated on the whole JQ, the Jewish question, and all of this stuff. So some of the earliest papers I read by the Common Sense was a fantastic paper showing that the NAACP was founded by 12 communist Jews, just the way the cookie crumbled, right, and one communist black guy, which is kind of interesting. And the communist black guy, by the way, in fact, died and was buried in Ghana. But these communist Jews wanted to weaponize blacks. They thought of them as the new proletariat back in the early part of the 20th century. Now, soon, when I was reading in the middle 60s as a young teenager who was already educated on the Jewish question, by the time I was 12, 13, I guess I was a savant. I was really a young kid. I was reading reading Scientific American and books like that and magazines like that and other things from the time I was in fifth, sixth grade, every month. And so I was pretty well read even for that age, reading since I was three with my parents. But my father was very educated. Mother was a chemistry professor, all that stuff. But anyway, so I'm reading this stuff, and they were saying that, folks, you better get prepared for this. But Russia is in a process of overthrowing Jewish power. That Russians have been replacing the Jews, starting with Stalin. That's why you had the Jewish plot against Stalin. And everybody knows that Stalin had this program. In fact, they wanted to send all the Jews of Russia to Azerbaijan, which is way out in the middle by the Bering Sea. Can you believe that, right? They wanted to ship them out. Russia passed laws in Russia that criminalized and said it was treason to be a Zionist. And Russia also understood that the Jews went against Russia, and the Jews went, toward Trotsky and ultimately to Zionism, like the neocons who became Zionists. They saw this clearly, right? And this was so fascinating to me. And at first I didn't believe it because I was so ingrained with anti-communism, and I grew up, my whole life, my father, telling me we should have gone in with Patton into Moscow. I'm kind of glad we didn't now what I know, because that would have killed millions and millions of more Europeans, including Russians and Americans, when ultimately the Russians overthrew the communists without destroying half of Europe, right, with a massive another world war and atomic bombing. But anyway, so the communists were being overthrown, and I started checking it out. And I started looking at the facts, and I started reading some of these. Even then, they had the new traces of neocons, and they had some of these elements, like Rostow, like these other ones, like Hermann Kahn, who was like, by the way, Hermann Kahn was the character that they modeled Dr. Strangelove after, the Kubrick movie. Yeah. Uh-huh. Now he was. Now these three Jews were mentors of guess who? Charles Schwab. And the reason why they created something. I'm sorry to go so long, but I hope that your listeners are enjoying this little down history lane or something. But so here's what happened. So the Marshall Fund wasn't because they were so loyal to former Nazi Jewry trying to help. They really were the Jews in this country were realizing that this change was going about. There were some Jews and all that still had a kind of an attachment to Russia, some Jews that very much didn't, and some of them just because they just couldn't believe this was happening, right? And some Jews were still attached to the communist ideology. Communism was a Jewish ideology from the beginning with Karl Marx, and don't forget LaSalle, and his co-author of the Communist Manifesto and a lot of his early communist works, Karl Marx, was guess who? It was Moses Hess. Moses Hess was also the founder of Zionism. Isn't that interesting? And Moses Hess believed in so-called the racial theory of history, which I endorse. I think that history is more of a study of peoples and nations in terms of bloodlines, tribes like the French or the France and the Anglo-Saxons was England and the Germans were Germany, that kind of thing. The Russians were Russia, right? And history is really about people and certain tribes of people. And when the Romans came in and built Rome, and when those Romans had a low birth rate and were replaced, Rome changed. And what was the Roman Empire and the principles of this the first Western civilization, along with Greece, started to change. The same thing happened with a change in Greeks. But anyway, so this is what Moses Hess said. Once they did the Marshall Fund, now the Marshall Plan, they transitioned to what's called the Marshall Fund. Now, guess where this was headed up by out of? It was Kissinger was in there. Yeah, Kahn was in there. Herman Kahn.
Yeah. The heroines, right? Too, I think.
Yeah, well, they were. But the Marshall Fund, now what they were doing, so Kissinger, Henry Kissinger, he actually created what's called international seminars. And the idea was to get the top students and top individuals from every country in the world who were like the elite, and primarily aimed at the Goy elite. They had some Jews in it, but Jews were running all the courses at Harvard, right? And again, Noam Goldman, who was the father of Zionism in the 20th century, he's the guy that created Israel. He's the guy that was behind all the original World Jewish Congress and world efforts and the United Nations effort and and also the League of Nations effort to help try to create this Jewish state in Palestine. Now, his name was Noam Goldman. Uh-huh. And by the way, he's a very interesting Jew.
Is it Noam or Noam?
N-A-H-U-M, Goldman.
Noam.
That's his
father. Okay.
Now, he's the most famous Zionist and revered Zionist of the 20th century, and they give him more credit for Israel than any other person. His son was Guido Goldman. And guess who Guido Goldman
is? Come on, nobody's named Guido Goldman.
G-U-I-D-O.
I know what Guido is.
Guido is actually a common
That's
name.
That's funny.
It's like an Italian name, but it's actually a European name in other languages than Italian, too, believe it or not. So Guido is a name in a number of European languages, but they were from Europe, you know, originally. But anyway, so this is a fascinating story, right? So this is and so one of the students was none other than Charles Schwab. Now, I really investigated this. I thought sort of he was a Jew first. I thought maybe he'd be a secret Jew. I have a very good researcher that really educated, you know, very much looking for those Jews and can always almost find them. And I think that maybe his mother was Jewish. No, his father was a German National Socialist, and definitely. And of course, he grew up. I mean, he was only 9 years. He was born in 1939. So he didn't have anything to do with Nazis. He wasn't certainly a Nazi. But he was an engineer. His father was an engineer, too. I mean, they weren't, like, politically oriented. And he was like the top of his class in Germany. And these were German schools then, and very little Jews in them too, by the way. He was just a top student. And he just had a career ahead of him as a real up-and-coming leader. And so they identified these people across Europe, and especially they wanted this in Germany. Why did they want it in Germany? Because, again, they were afraid of a redo of Nazism. And they also wanted Germany to be strong and be connected to the Jewish, you know, this evolving Jewish elite in America that was taking over the media of America. They already controlled the three television networks by the early 50s, as you know. They controlled radio since the 1920s. They controlled the Federal Reserve since the Federal Reserve was founded in 1913. They were the biggest stockbroking firms, which affected all kinds of politics. They brought us into the First World War. They brought us into the Second World War. They brought us into the Iraq War, which were mainly Jewish neocons. So they wanted to get these other intellectuals. They also brought early on the father of Macron and Macron himself into these seminars, which is basically what the World Economic Forum does, by the way. So what the World Economic Forum is propagandizing primarily Gentiles, but also other Jews into the agenda that they want. And it was really an agenda that was first really sponsored by what was called the Frankfurter School in Germany. I know you're familiar with that. I mean, there was Marcuse and all these.
Yeah.
Right. And the way once the Jews were overthrown in communism, the whole plan for taking over the world changed from communism under Trotsky, right, and Lenin, which were both Jews, and the Jews who were overthrown by ultimately Stalin, but ultimately Russians. They changed that over to this modern wokeism that you have with the critical race theory, that you've got with the LGBTism, where they promoted all this stuff, homosexuality, open borders, you know, destruction of the family, all of these things, which were started by the Frankfurter School, which was originally a Jewish school from the 1930s, actually. And all these Jews, Marcuse, you know, all these Jews, this is where they came from. And this is what they adopted. It was kind of a socialist system, like you own nothing, but they're going to have everything being rented. But it was more like a feudalist system. Jews are going to be at the top. And just like in feudalism, where the Jew didn't, I mean, where the peasant didn't own the land, they worked on the land like a sharecropper, right? Well, this is what they wanted to do to the whole world, and they did it under this model of capitalism, which was perfect for them, because through capitalism, they could both control politics in a democracy by controlling the money for candidates. They could also control the media through the corporations they controlled, and that's the biggest influence on candidates. And then ultimately, they could corrupt the system like they did with Citizens United, where they made it possible for any of these Jewish billionaires to give billions of dollars. 18 of the biggest contributors to Hillary Clinton were Jewish Zionists, most of them bankers. The same thing is true in Biden. 8 of the 9 biggest contributors to Biden for the presidency. Biden was an open Zionist. He called himself a Zionist. He said, you don't have to be Jewish to be a Zionist. He was totally, you know, he was bought and paid for them years ago. And he appointed Ron Klain, a big Jewish Zionist, and also a neocon, and a neoliberal, I might say, as chief of staff. He's the one that led to the appointments, 8 of the 9 most high critical appointments in the cabinet, including the head of intelligence, who now the CIA and FBI reports to. That's Avril Haines. Nobody even knows who Avril Haines is. She's a Jew. Her mother's name was Rappaport, entitled to Jewish citizenship in Israel, who hobnobs guess who? The Mossad. Guess who also was at the dry run for the pandemic, the COVID-19 pandemic? I think it was in Massachusetts or whatever. Guess who was also there? Avril Haines running it. Huh. Believe it or not. Avril Haines. We have, you know, Mary Garland as head of the Justice Department, which also controls the FBI and CIA because they decide who you prosecute and who you don't. And anytime a political person is charged with anything, you have to get it approved. But once they always had that policy, kind of, if you get a political person, they want to make sure there's no political shenanigans here going against a different political party. But now that the Jews controlled these institutions in the deep state, the CIA and all that, boy, it was a perfect situation for them because they now control the candidates. And they did that, of course. And again, it brings right up to date with the Hunter Biden laptop. So the Hunter Biden laptop was told by all this deep state Jews and others, right, who go along with them and got their career because of that, many former communists who become neocons, they said to us that that was a fake, that that was Russian disinformation. Now, the FBI and the CIA, everybody understands this, who's studied it now, they had to know that the Hunter Biden laptop was not Russian disinformation. It wasn't Russians trying to overthrow the election. And in fact, when the New York Times, by the way, guess who the New York Times endorsed for president of the United States? Was it Biden or was it Trump? You know, I know.
I honestly don't know, because that paper is of so little interest to me. I pay no attention.
Well, it's the most influential paper, but it's only interest to me because I want to know what they're saying, so I read it, right?
Yeah.
And I know, I want to know what the propaganda they're putting out.
So what do they do? They endorse Trump
for president of the United States, right?
No, it has to be Biden.
Of course it was. Yeah. And it's Joe Biden, the Zionist for president of the United States. So this is the leading paper of the country. It also has the New York Times News Service for dozens and dozens of papers across America. It's read by all the intellectuals. It's read by all the government officials.
I know. Yeah.
It's read by everybody of intelligentsia in universities. It's very influential. And it's read all over the world. It's repeated all over the world, their stories, right?
Uh-huh.
So
uh-huh.
They knew that the Biden laptop was real. It was obvious. Anybody that read it was already – look, the FBI had it for months. They knew that it was real, that it was not some sort of Russian propaganda. It was Joe Biden's son in there doing the dope, you know, and having the escapades with pedophilia and everything else, right, and all the things that they were doing.
Possibly
and this guy,
murdering
the,
of children. We don't know.
Terrible, terrible. So they knew that it wasn't Russian disinformation. They knew – this was Jewish disinformation of the New York Times, which is run by five Jews. I can name them. I don't have time to name them right now. I've named them before on your show. Five Jews who are the chief heads of the people who control all the voting stock of the Times, which is the Class B stock. They're the only people that control the Times. Five Jewish Zionists who give hundreds of millions of dollars to Jewish organizations in the state of Israel. Correct? It's run by Jews. It promotes open borders, it promotes LGBTism, it also promotes anti-Russianism, obviously. So think of the Hunter Biden laptop. That is the canary in the mine. You know, a canary in the mine is a very high metabolic small bird, so it has a fast breathing rate. So if you have a poison in the mine, that canary is going to be affected first, and when it drops over dead, the miners say, oh my God, we got to get out of here before they're going to be affected. And the New York Times is a canary in the mine, right? Because mm-hmm. what they told us was that this was Russian disinformation and Russian interference. It wasn't Russian interference. It was entirely Jewish interference by the Jewish New York Times and by the Jewish CIA and the Jewish-controlled FBI and the Jewish deep state. They've been controlling the advisors to presidents. Like I said, even Kennedy's speechwriter was Walt Rostow. Later, he was national supervisor.
Yes, absolutely.
Then it was Kissinger, you know? And it's been that way ever since. La Mariv, the paper in Israel, said that you can't call the government of the United States anymore, and they name the names of the people on the National Security Council, who makes the highest intelligence decisions of the United States and basically tells the president what to do, even whether to go to war or not, right? Even nuclear war. If Avril Haines came in there to Biden and said, you got to push the button, sir, they've made an attack on us. We have no choice. We must retaliate as much as we can, or we have no chance, right? Biden would push the button. And that's the most powerful person in the United States of America, and along with the chief of staff, Klein, which has now been replaced by Zients, who happened to be the COVID czar. You see how all this runs together, Jeff?
Yeah, of course. Of course.
It runs together.
Of course
together.
I do. So, yeah, sure.
So where the WEF came from was Kissinger, Guido Goldman, the son of Noam Goldman, the famous, most famous Zionist and creator of Israel in the 20th century, really, caused all the basics for it, and also Herman Kahn. And all these were supporting, and the reason why they supported Schwab and they put him in these schools and so forth is they turned him into their Shabbos Goy. And a Shabbos Goy is like this. The reason why the Jews went against Sanders, of course, was a very simple reason. First of all, he had a communist background. He did go to a communist kibbutz in Israel, right? He was promoting all these terrible Jewish programs. He supported the state of Israel, even though he was kind of a two-state solution guy. And he was very Marxist, right? And he was also a very loyal Jew. And they did not want a Jew to be president of the United States and put in the woke program that Biden can put in as a Gentile. Does that make sense to you?
Yeah, I get it.
Doesn't that make perfect sense? So they sabotaged his campaign because they knew that if it was a Jewish person, obvious big Jew, if he was going to be president of the United States, that was going to raise Jewish recognition because they would see that it was a Jew, even though the people who were the top six of the top seven cabinet members that brought us into this war, the Mayorkas, who's not really a Hispanic, he's a Jew, and he recognizes himself as a Jew. You know, Merrick Garland, again, Avril Haines, the head of the Treasury Department. You want to keep going? The head of the State Department, all Jews.
It's an endless list.
It's an endless
parade, right?
So they sabotaged Biden. Well, they did this. Well, that's what Charles Schwab was all about. Now, if you look at the leading person in the WEF, the guy that's really their philosopher, he's the guy that's teaching everybody about you'll own nothing and you got to have chips in your head, right? And we can have robots that we're going to place people, but we're not going to kill people, which they are going to kill people. But what we're going to do is we're going to put them, you know, we'll get them on weed. And we'll get him on. This is what he openly promotes. He's a Jew. His name is Harari, right? Big Jew.
Yep.
He's professor in Israel, right?
Yep.
So this is the WEF. Now, what the WEF does, it's not like they push a button and control the world. What they do is they still do this youth leadership funds, and they bring people who are in business, including Gentiles and Jews.
We're running out of time, David. You got to wrap her up in 60 seconds. Go ahead.
And that's where the WEF is coming from. So the thing about the balloon is this is nothing but Jewish media. It's nothing but Jewish-controlled media that's making a big deal to divert us from the real danger to this country, which is not the Chinese. The Chinese are not...
thermonuclear war with Russia. That's the real danger.
They want a war with Russia. And also, let me tell you, they're afraid of China. I really believe that. I don't even know if it's a military balloon.
They better be afraid of China, unless they're completely insane. You got that right. They are.
Deal.
They can't beat the Chinese.
This is what I said I don't know yet. I mean, they're doing a lot of things.
With what? What are we going to beat them with? Pink, high-heeled, wearing troops with no ammunition and no artillery shells?
Well, one thing they can do to them, they can cause a tremendous economic disaster for them.
I know.
They're trying to destroy Russia. So far, Russia's resisting it. Let me just give you my meme.
Russia's prospering right now.
This is what I wrote on my site, and I talked about today on my show on the network.
Yeah.
They can
listen
to it, by the way, at davidduke.com or my gab at Real David Duke.
Gotcha.
So I show a clown guy. I say, phone apps spy on us 24 hours a day, recording every single aspect of our lives. And then people see a stupid balloon and everybody loses their mind. And I wrote this. I said, my title for this meme, Jewish Zionists at Google and Facebook spy on us every second of every day, totally control our media and politics, and get us into constant wars for Jewish global supremacy and hegemony. Then tell us we should lose our minds over a stupid balloon that has no guidance but the wind. You know, I mean,
I don't know that for a fact, but I would suggest there may be physics involved here that can guide things with certain metallic components, shall we say, that can be guided. We can control the weather. We can steer hurricanes. Why couldn't somebody steer a balloon?
Might be able to control aspects of the weather, whether you're going to have fronts or lows or things like that. That's all true, but that would take a huge operation, and there would have to be a lot of cooperation from America. And I don't think America.
I think here's the other side of that. Here's the other side of the balloon story. We got to go. It is now alleged that we tracked it from the beginning with a U-2 high altitude, 70,000 feet spy plane. A U-2 back from the 60s. So they're running U-2s. They've updated them and all that. They were above the balloon the entire time. They were allegedly blocking the balloon's ability to send telemetry to the satellites above it. And they were also intercepting and recording all the transmission. That's what we're told now. This is a new wrinkle to it. If that's true, it would make sense as to why they would let it drift across the country. Because they could capture everything it was looking at and sending. So we have more evidence on the Chinese than they would like. For sure.
It also could be true they're making all this stuff up, right? I mean,
it's absolutely true. I can't trust anybody. Anybody. Right. I don't.
Right.
Everyone lies.
Anyway, so,
you don't know.
So
we're in the digital world. Your eye can't tell you what's real anymore. You can't.
So I just wanted to give a little rundown on the WEF and explain to people that it's not like they push a button and then they get this country to do it. But what they're doing is they're brainwashing all these people like Macron, like for instance, Trudeau in Canada.
Say goodnight. Hurry up. You got to say goodnight. I'm sorry.
That's it. Okay, go to davidduke.com, and I'm on the air tomorrow at, 10 a.m. Central Time, 11 a.m. Eastern Time, davidduke.com, and you can find me on the Rents Radio Network, along with my good friend, the great Jeff Rents.
Thank you, sir. Thank you, David. We have to run. You be well. Take care. Okay. All right. We are late, so we're going to jump into our break and come right back.